I'm Phil Vavra, and this is Piedmont Arts. On October 24th, a new composition will have its world premiere at Central Piedmont Community College's Dale Halton Theater. The Charlotte Civic Orchestra will be performing the Symphony No. 1, The Wolf, by Sean Michael Smith. On this episode, you'll get to know this up-and-coming composer. We'll also see what other kinds of fun we can get up to over the next week with fanfare, and later, you'll hear about a groundbreaking new collaboration between Charlotte's Beckler Museum of Modern Art and Novant Health called Art on Prescription. Thanks for being here. A lot of people these days have side hustles. Some folks drive Uber, Lyft, or DoorDash. Other people sell stuff on Etsy or eBay. And then there's Sean Michael Smith, who composed a symphony. Among the many other things he has going on, Sean, welcome to Piedmont Arts.
Thank you for having me, Phil.
Now, I read that you're a native of Sleepy Hollow, New York.
Yes.
Washington Irving country.
Yes, yes.
And that you went to NC State. Is that what brought you to North Carolina?
My father brought us down working for First Union, and they were poaching people from New York City, and so he brought us down, and we entered an entirely new landscape that it was a different world.
Culture shock.
Culture shock.
Yeah, and you've been here ever since.
Yes, been here ever since.
So how, when, and where did your journey with music, and all the different kinds of music that you're involved with, how did all that begin?
I think it began with rides to preschool in the morning with my dad. He would always play the Talking Heads' Psycho Killer. And from that moment, that was my first formative musical memory. It was like I had this insatiable desire to just listen to everything I could from every different genre. He also had a cassette tape of Rossini that he'd play in his car. So those were like the two things. And ultimately, those are kind of the two tracks that I followed musically, rock and classical.
Well, yeah, so you should explain, because I've spent some time on your website and was surprised at the variety of genres that you have written and performed.
I think the first instrument that I was really, like, just completely in awe of was the guitar. You know, it's common to see somebody with a guitar, especially when you're a kid, and you just think, wow, they're so cool. And in our household, we listened to like Stevie Ray Vaughan and Jimi Hendrix, Rolling Stones, things like that. And so I wanted to play guitar. And so around middle school, I picked it up. Actually, there was one at like a garage sale in the neighborhood. And there's this $25 beat up acoustic guitar, terrible shape. But I begged my parents for it and they got it for me. And from that point on, I was trying to teach myself songs that I'd listen to on the radio. So I'd pop a cassette in, try to catch it, you know, record the song as it came on. I might miss the intro or something, and then I would just play it back a million times. And so from there, it was just sort of this, like, every day my obsession with it was just to try to play something else and get better and better, and eventually, you know, started writing stuff. But then another sort of interesting thing happened to complement that growth, which was joining middle school band, and, you know, you learn to read music, and they gave me Finale Notepad. So then I was writing on Finale Notepad, and then, I mean, fast forward to today, it's just simply been like this line of growth in terms of, like, what I could do and learning to express myself. But, yeah, you know, you touched on that I did a couple different genres. So the interesting thing about this symphony is that it's based on themes from my Swedish death metal project. It sounds maybe at first like, you know, what's the connection there, but metal has a lot of, it is seated in a lot of like traditional music theory. And there's a lot of interesting stuff happening with like key changes, modulations, and things like that that happen in classical. But, you know, it's just through an electric guitar with an amp and maybe somebody screaming. So if you take a lot of the musicality, it actually translates really well. Yeah, it's sort of always been this rock path. And then when I decided to actually go ahead and write my first major orchestral work, I was already in a good place to do it. Having said that, I did learn a lot, you know, in that transition, and I did have to, I was telling someone else, I kind of had to build the airplane as I was flying it, because I'm actually not like a music student. I didn't go to school for music, so I kind of had to figure out what I didn't know and learn it as I was writing this piece. It's interesting because I had this one book from Arnold Schoenberg called Fundamentals of Music Composition, and I had it for a long time before I started to actually try to write this orchestral piece. And reading it, it makes logical sense, but when you don't have an application that you're kind of reading it against to inform what you're writing, it just sort of remains in the abstract. But then when I actually did start writing this piece, concepts from that book started to make sense because I saw them in a different light. And then I realized there were lots of other things that I was missing. And so I had this motivator to essentially build up my blind spots. So then I went deeper into his catalog. I got Structural Functions of Harmony, things like that. And then once the composition was done, I know nothing about arrangement, so now I've got to learn about that. And there's some more rock parallel there, because mixing rock music, you're thinking about the landscape in your headphones and how resonance works and doubling parts and things. And that's a lot of like what happens with orchestration. You imagine in a theater, if just a cello is playing a melody, it may actually sound a little empty. So how can you add another part that sounds great in terms of tone comparisons? It's a nice tone color match, but then fills the room. So yeah, it was just a really interesting process. And I you know, learned so much as I was doing it that now when I, in the future, begin my next symphony, I'm so thrilled to like be able to start on a totally better footing.
Well, so when did you start thinking that you might want to tackle composing a symphony? How long ago was that?
It had always been a dream of mine, but sort of a distant dream, because I had some insecurities about not having been like, you know, a music student in some famous conservatory or something. So like I always had a little bit of this self-doubt. And there was this one Christmas I specifically remember sitting by the tree once everybody had finished opening gifts and they went to go eat breakfast. And I was just kind of staring at the tree, and I was thinking about, you know, we gave each other these material gifts, books, olive oil, whatever the gift was, and they're thoughtful, but I wanted to give something from my heart directly to my parents. I just felt really grateful for them and wanted to just show my deepest sense of love. So I thought, you know, I'll try to do something that's almost impossible for, you know, it's not impossible, but it felt that way. Let me write a symphony. So that was when I kind of told myself I would do it. It still took years before I was ready to do it, but just before my first son was born, I started to get a little bit more serious about music because I realized I wasn't going to have a lot of time to do music. So that's when I started writing my most recent metal stuff. And the whole overarching goal of the metal project was to generate themes for the symphony. So technically the symphony work started then, and I was just trying to work efficiently. 2023 is when I began writing this work, and then I finished it in 2024. And it was a very long, tedious process, but being in the weeds day in and day out on this thing and just, you know, obsessing about the details of it all day long, even when I wasn't working on it, one of the greatest joys I've had so far in life, aside from maybe getting married and having kids. But
right. Well, and you talk about worrying about time with the birth of your son. I know all about that. There's also a day job, right?
Right.
That you have to manage.
Right. And there was a period of time, so I work at one of the banks, and there was a period of time where I had to really learn about balance, like a healthy balance, because I was working 9 to 5 for my day job, and then at night I would work into, you know, 1, 2 in the morning and then get up. And then when the kids were here, I had to find time to exercise, so I started going to the gym at like 5:30, 6 o'clock. So I started burning the candle at both ends a little too much. So this also kind of allowed me to find a balance, which I think extends beyond any project anyone does. It's just good life discipline and knowledge. So I've grown a lot through this whole thing, musically and as a person, and gained a lot of confidence. But yeah, it's a lot to manage a day job and writing something like this.
So what's the inspiration behind the symphony? You call it The Wolf. Where does that come from?
I've always kind of felt like a wolf is seen as a bit of a loner who's always sort of out there surviving, you know, a fierce animal, but they're also a pack animal. I see myself that way a lot, especially when I look at like my college years. I think like I have these interests that sort of isolate me from everyone around me because I spend a lot of time by myself doing them. And I need that, but also I crave being with people. I crave the social connection. So I thought it was like an interesting way to express that. But even beyond that, into like some more general, let's say, values or emotions, I saw the wolf as a symbol of resilience. And I think, especially in today's society, particularly in the United States, I think we need to be reminded that we have to always keep fighting. We have to, you know, there's a lot of darkness. You've got to stay strong, and you can't ever give up. I think that's the big thing that I'm trying to express with this symphony. So it's sort of a journey through a struggle that you didn't want to have to deal with, but you do, and you've got to keep your head down, keep fighting, and you'll triumph, because the human spirit has always gotten through the darkest of times in history.
Spirit of a wolf in survival mode.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I like it. So what was the process then, once you complete the writing, of getting it performed? Did you have to do all of that yourself, finding the orchestra, the conductor, the venue?
Yes. I don't know if that's normally how it goes, but for me, I reached out to almost 200 different orchestras in the United States and some international. I'm coming at this as a bit of an outsider, so I don't know. There probably is a better process for like an established composer, but for me, it was really knocking on doors, asking artistic directors at different orchestras to consider my work. And fortunately, the Charlotte Civic Orchestra, which is, you know, a hometown orchestra here, was thrilled to do the work. And so we connected, we talked through it, and we set a premiere date.
Gone around the world looking for someone, and then you find it right here in your backyard.
Yeah, and that's poetic. Yeah. It's how it's meant to be. It should have always been premiered here in the first place.
I wonder if Craigslist would have worked. I don't even know.
Maybe better. Yeah.
Well, let's give the details again then. It's Friday, October 24th, 7:30 at Central Piedmont Community College's Dale Halton Theater in Charlotte. And it's the world premiere of Sean Michael Smith's Symphony No. 1, The Wolf, performed by the Charlotte Civic Orchestra. And who's the conductor?
Dr. Jeffrey Whitehead.
So once you get this off the ground, then this is going to be huge for you. Are you already thinking, what's next?
I definitely am.
Is there a Symphony No. 2 in the works?
There will be. I've already begun generating some themes, and I think I want it to be an ode to Charlotte, the next work.
Nice.
Yeah, so it'll be an interesting piece. I'm going to do it through sort of the same lens. I'm probably going to do another rock album, and then we'll do another symphony.
Okay, so you haven't left one for the other. That can lead to some very interesting things. What is the best way for folks to find out more about you and about the performance if they want to attend and get tickets and all that?
You could go to seanmichaelsmith.org/the-wolf, and you could find more information about the work. It also has a link to get tickets. If you want to go directly to the CPCC website, it's tix.cpcc.edu. And I'm also now on Instagram, Sean Michael Smith Composer.
Well, thank you very much for your time. You've got a lot of plates spinning at once. And best of luck with the premiere. We're looking forward to hearing more about that. And best of luck with the bank and the family and Swedish death metal.
Thank you so much, Phil. I appreciate you giving me the platform here to talk about it, and it's great to meet you.
Coming up, I'll be talking to Todd Smith and Molly Phillips of the Beckler Museum of Modern Art about a new partnership they have with Novant Health called Art on Prescription. But first, let's see what else you should have on your events calendar with this edition of Fanfare. Trick-or-treating is great, but you don't have to wait until Halloween to have fun in October. This edition of Fanfare includes everything from choral music to liver mush. You'll even find a couple of opportunities to inspire the next generation of classical music fans. Caritas a cappella ensemble, the Christ Church Choir, and some great instrumentalists will be performing together at Christ Episcopal Church in Charlotte on Friday, October 17th at 7:30 p.m. Admission for Of Sound and Spirit, a choral and orchestral celebration, is free. The Charlotte Symphony Orchestra is presenting a terrific matinee for children of all ages at Knight Theater on Saturday, October 18th at 11 a.m. Resident conductor Christopher James Lees will lead an engaging one-hour program that's sure to get the next generation hooked on classical music. The morning concert will include Mozart's iconic overture to The Marriage of Figaro and Sergei Prokofiev's Peter and the Wolf with narrator Candace Neal.
A new season of exciting performances begins at Queen's University's Gambrell Center with the String Queens on Saturday, October 18th at 7:30 p.m. The Washington, D.C.-based trio, who are teachers by day, have ignited audiences at the Kennedy Center, Carnegie Hall, and even Wimbledon with their multi-genre repertoire that ranges from Baroque to jazz to top 40. The Western Piedmont Symphony kicks off its masterwork series with Elemental Music at Lenore Ryan University's P.E. Monroe Auditorium in Hickory on Saturday, October 18th. The program includes Aaron Copland's Suite from the Tenderland and Beethoven's Symphony No. 6. If you're a fan of the Friday afternoon cartoon on WDAV, this should be on your calendar. The Orchestra of the Carolinas is bringing classical music from classic cartoons to Davidson United Methodist Church on Saturday, October 18th at 7 p.m. We're talking Looney Tunes, Tom and Jerry, Mickey Mouse, and more. Admission is free. Okay, I don't really think anyone is trick-or-treating for liver mush. I, on the other hand, consider it a delicacy, which is why I love going to the annual North Carolina Liver Mush Festival in Shelby. This year's edition is set for Saturday, October 18th, and will offer much more than the mush. There's live music, fun kids activities, the rollover pet zone, bring your dogs, and over 100 vendors. And conductor Michelle Merrill and the Winston-Salem Symphony are getting in the spirit with all sorts of musical tricks and treats at their Halloween Spooktacular at Brendel Recital Hall on Sunday, October 19th at 3 p.m. You'll hear music from Wicked and Three Portraits of a Witch, as well as the haunting sounds of Sergei Prokofiev, Modest Mussorgsky, Arturo Marquez, and John Williams. Pre-concert activities in the lobby begin at 2 p.m., including storytelling, an instrument petting zoo, and fun crafts. Well, that should be plenty for you to see and do over the next week. Remember, you can also read my complete fanfare column and see what else is popping up on the WDAV events calendar at WDAV.org.
In 2023, the U.S. Surgeon General reported that 50% of adults experienced considerable levels of loneliness. The COVID-19 pandemic only exacerbated the problem of loneliness and social isolation. Fast forward to April of 2025, when the Beckler Museum of Modern Art in Uptown Charlotte teamed up with Novant Health to launch Charlotte Art on Prescription as a way of combating loneliness locally. It's the only such program in the United States, and I'm joined by two of the people who are making it happen. Todd Smith is the executive director of the Beckler Museum of Modern Art, and Molly Phillips is the museum's assistant director of education. Welcome to you both.
It's good to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Molly, I'd like to start with you because I was told that you were the one to originally pitch the idea of Art on Prescription. So take me back to how this idea was born.
Yeah, you know, it started with, I joined the museum about 2.5 years ago. When I started, I was familiar with the Beckler and its, you know, robust offerings in terms of community engagement. But with my hiring and because of, you know, changes that have happened at the museum, mostly because of the pandemic, it really gave us the opportunity to rethink what community engagement meant to the Beckler. And so myself, Todd, a small group of us, we got together and we're brainstorming what could community engagement look like. And it was around this time that I came across the report from the U.S. Surgeon General. I started thinking more about social prescriptions, which was a model that is very popular in the U.K., but has not quite had the same popularity in the United States yet. And that was really the impetus to the program, is we were very excited about the research that had been done and offering something here in the Southeast as well. And I think that, you know, that was really what started the conversation.
Now, Todd, can you speak about this unique partnership with Novant Health and the process of how you're engaging the public in this way? Basically, how does it work?
Right. So for the first phase of this, which is a pilot period, probably up to about 18 months, we're working directly with behavioral health specialists at Novant. And individuals who are seeing their specialist might say to their provider, you know, I'm feeling disconnected. I don't really have a sense of this community. What can I do? And so the provider might prescribe an opportunity for that individual to be part of this project. And what they would do, they would then contact Molly and then get set up in one of our cohorts who would, we have a cohort of about 10 people each every other month that we're working to start with the program. And then they would come together at the museum for several programs with the museum, meet each other in the cohort. And then go out to our partners around the community to engage in arts programming, both visual, hands-on making, as well as performances for individuals to attend.
Who are some of those other arts partners?
So at the moment, we're working with Charlotte Ballet, Clayworks, and Three Bone Theater.
So it sounds like it's like a medical diagnosis that puts this into play, or could it be, I just moved to town, I don't know anybody? I guess I'm wondering like the extent of qualifying somebody for this.
When we began to partner with Novant, we really believed in their expertise, so we did not give them much criteria. You know, they are the experts in this work. We feel like they know what to look for in a person, but I think it can happen. You know, I think there are many, many different perspectives or many different sort of criteria that they look for in a participant that is referred to the program. The one thing that we mentioned to them and wanted to make sure that every participant knew is that this is certainly not a replacement for therapy, not a replacement for art therapy. We are not licensed art therapists, though the program does share a lot of connections with art therapy. But otherwise, that was really the only criteria. A lot of the participants, you know, may have a former background in the arts or used to take art classes, but no longer do. And then we have some participants that are brand new to arts experiences, have never attended a theater performance, have never attended an art making workshop. So it does kind of attract a wide range.
And what about the cost to the individual? Is it basically what they're paying to their Novant provider?
Yeah, it is completely free for the participant to be in the program. The only thing that a participant needs to cover themselves is transportation to and from the different arts events that they sign up for. But otherwise, it is completely free for them to participate in the program.
Well, that's great. So how's it been going so far since April?
It's been amazing. You know, I have had the privilege to work on many, many different museum programs in my career. This is the one that I can tell is just, it has the most impact on a person. So we have 41 people registered so far. Like I said, they come from a range of backgrounds, you know, from arts experiences or not, and also age and a variety of neighborhoods and suburbs around Charlotte as well. And it's been a wonderful experience. They have had the most amazing things to say in the program. I've had so many of them come to me and just in awe that a program like this exists, and noted that, you know, had this program not existed, they, one, would not have participated in the variety of programs that we offer, the variety of different arts experiences, but also would never have thought of the arts as, you know, as a source for physical and mental well-being. So we really are, we feel like this is really changing people's perspective on what the arts can do.
Todd, as we head into the darker months of the year, shorter days possibly sparking feelings of depression and, you know, seasonal affective disorder, do you and Novant Health anticipate an uptick of prescriptions?
Well, it wouldn't be surprising if we saw that come through. I mean, we have a set number that we can accommodate over the next 8 to 10 months. Our hope is that once we finish this first 18 months of a pilot project, that we have the research and the data and the understanding of what works to help people combat loneliness and feeling disconnected, that we can then create standalone programs that can go out into the community. So eventually you will not have to be referred to by a behavioral health specialist, but rather the museum will design programs with our partners that further the same initiative that we have going on right now.
So you haven't maxed out that number yet?
No, we have not. I mean, the only max is Molly's time.
Of course. All right. So for someone experiencing feelings of loneliness right now, first step to get involved with Charlotte Art on Prescription, they must go see their Novant Health provider, correct?
That is correct, yes.
And then from there, they come to the museum and meet with you?
They do, yeah. So they fill out a short application form online once they receive that referral, and that goes to us at the Beckler. And then, yeah, every participant starts with a introductory program at the museum. Really just a chance for us to get to know one another, for them to get to know some of the other cohort members, and then to also spend some time in the museum, since a lot of them have never been to the museum before, and we are sort of the home base for the program, and so there are a lot of programs that happen at the museum. So,
well, it sounds great, and from there, it sounds like this whole world of arts in Charlotte opens up to you there, and all sorts of social opportunities. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. I know there are a lot of people that don't know about this yet. I'm certainly just learning about it for the first time. And to find out more, you can visit Beckler.org/art-on-prescription or talk to your Novant Health provider. They should have that information for you as well. My guests are Todd Smith, Executive Director of the Beckler Museum of Modern Art, and Molly Phillips is the museum's Assistant Director of Education. Thanks so much for what you're doing to share great art and help people find connection and community.
Thank you so much.
And that's our time for this episode. Be sure to subscribe and check out our past episodes at wdav.org/podcasts, on Apple Podcasts and iHeart Podcasts. For Piedmont Arts, I'm Phil Vavra.